Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, the New York Knicks. A tragic 113-104 loss to the Toronto Raptors, who were missing 40% of their starting lineup. And it didn't matter, Alex, as they bulldozed the Knicks after the Knicks dominated the first quarter in this one.
Yeah, the Knicks did the thing that they've been doing recently, where they come out to a hot start and then get listless. It almost makes me pine for the days when they used to fall behind big and then be scratching and clawing to get back into it the whole game, because it's a lot more enjoyable, at least when they're fighting in a comeback. But anyway, we got a bunch to talk about, none of it particularly good, next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down. This is all about back up off the glass. It's good. RJ Barrett.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, and today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. And we also want to thank you, as always, for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today and every day. We wanted to remind you we're on all platforms now, including, you already know this if you're watching us, on YouTube. I am Gavin Shaw, a resumed play-by-play broadcaster. I got a million games this month, so Alex will be doing a whole lot of work, and he's more than qualified because he's the editor-in-chief of the Strickland, a beat writer at Clutch Points, covering, you guessed it, the New York Knicks, and he is embarrassed to be covering the New York Knicks tonight because this game sucked. The Knicks had a dominant first quarter. They were up 34-26. Julius Randle scoring 18 points, more than he had in each of his previous two games. It looked like all was good in Knicksdom. The ball was flowing. I put out a tweet comparing them to the 12-13 team, where it just felt like they were getting open three after open three, and you were sort of shocked whenever one didn't go in. And then it all sort of flipped. This Raptors team that, from a talent perspective, like I'll read out the starting lineup for the Raptors. Fred VanVleet, Zvi Mikhailiuk somehow, Gary Trent, OG Anunoby, Precious Achiuwa, with guys like, I think it's Justin Champagne out of Pittsburgh coming off the bench, Ken Burch off the bench, D. Banton out of Nebraska off the bench, Malachi Flynn off the bench, Goran Dragic insulted to not be playing off the bench. This is a Raptors team that had no business beating the Knicks, and yet they took over this game with defense and a rain of threes in the third quarter, and the Knicks didn't really have much fight left in the fourth. And it was disappointing, obviously, given the Knicks' fantastic start this year.
Yeah, just what more can you say about it? I mean, they've been kind of doing this in most games this year. And I feel like maybe we could say that this is the first time that it has truly bitten the Knicks in the butt to have been so lackadaisical after building up an early lead. Because, I mean, there was the game against the Magic, the second Magic game at the Garden, when obviously that was their first loss of the season. We talked about that one, and I remember we had this discussion in that episode of like, oh, is this sort of our way of seeing like, oh, just how much can the Knicks mail it in against a team that's worse than them? But that game, they probably exited that thinking, oh, well, you know, we might not have had our best night, but we were still only within like four or six or however many points. It was, you know, like a two possession game, and thinking, oh, you know, one more shot here or there, we would have won that game, even though we played bad. But maybe not making that connection of, no, it's an effort thing. It's not a, you know, that was not just an off shooting night. Like, you guys just didn't care and you didn't win the game. And then we saw the same thing with like the Bulls game, for example, got up and then took the foot off the gas and almost gave up the lead and lost the game late in the game. And then we saw the same thing against the Pelicans, you know, just kept keeping them at arm's length without ever really putting them away, despite being up by double digits early in the game and not being able to just like capitalize on that and ride that wave to like a 30-point lead to just put them away in the third quarter. And in this game, it was kind of just like they never even quite reached that point where they could have, you know, like stepped on the throat, so to speak, and just finished it. You know, they just were like, oh, well, you know, we're up 15 points in the second quarter, so now's the time where we can just start ISOing over and over and, you know, not passing the ball anymore, making sloppy passes when we do pass it, and then, you know, also just giving up open threes like it's nobody's business. And I understand that the Raptors, you know, were depleted in this game. They didn't have Scottie Barnes. They didn't have Pascal Siakam, and that's probably their two best players. But you still can't just be like, I mean, those two aren't even like their best three-point shooters. Like, the guys that were left are the bread and butter three-point shooters on the team. It was OG Anunoby, who had a career high, and Fred VanVleet, obviously, and, you know, freaking Gary Trent Jr., whose name just escaped me, and Svi Mykhailiuk, who you just mentioned a minute ago. I mean, literally this whole team, the whole starting lineup was, other than Precious Achiuwa, was just built on three-point shooting. And so why are you then just deciding to do the whole, like, I will just leave you open from three and see what happens strategy? You know, like, I know that generally in the NBA, teams regress to the mean of about 40% three-point shooting, even on a good night. But that's not assuming that the shots are all wide open and there just wasn't a single guy you could leave open on this team and not expect to get burned. And, you know, that's exactly what happened. The Knicks got burned. And I don't know. I mean, we'll talk about him more in the next segment, but I really think that Julius Randle, you know, you mentioned he came out there, he had those 18 points in the first quarter and then only 4 points thereafter for the rest of the game. And also just kind of looked listless. And, you know, he sort of sets that tempo for the Knicks. And, you know, I really don't want to get into that too much because I have a lot in the chamber for the next segment, but it wasn't just him. You know, there was just, at a certain point, it seemed like everybody kind of just stopped caring other than a select few, like RJ Barrett, I think, just continued to look like the part of a young budding, like, star in this game. And, you know, I thought, like, Emmanuel Quickley was pretty good, even though he wasn't hitting shots, but I mean, he played at least with good energy. And Obi Toppin, by and large, I think, you know, in the minutes that he was given, played with good energy. But, you know, like Fournier, Walker, Alec Burks, like, just all the guys that you would expect that, you know, it, like the guile and the smarts and the ability to keep things going the way that they had to, just weren't really doing that in this game. And you know, that energy sort of trickled down from Julius and then just sort of like got into other people too. And then all of a sudden you just kind of had a team that wasn't really playing for each other anymore and was just trying to ISO away a game and protect the lead. And then lo and behold, they didn't do either of those things and they wound up losing the game. So yeah, this is a disappointing one for me, for sure.
It felt weirdly lackadaisical, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Lackadaisical? Lackadaisical.
Mm-hmm. Lackadaisical.
Lacking of daisical.
Laxative daisical? What?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they were shitting themselves out there.
But, they took a big dump all over the court, that's for sure.
Yeah, right? yeah, it wasn't – I'm wondering, like, what is going on, like, with Tibbs and, like, practice and, like – post games, because against the Pelicans, he seemed so pissed the entire game. And he knew that was a team that they should have absolutely wrecked. Similar tonight against the Raptors. And again, like, it's a luxury position for the Knicks to be able to say, oh, we lost a random game and that is the end of the world. That's incredible that they've come that far. But it does feel weird. And I'm curious to see, like, how it portends against better teams. And I thought in particular the physicality Toronto had defensively, where, like, I don't think I've ever seen, even when the Knicks were really bad, a team just get the ball stripped as often as they had. And it shouldn't really be an issue. Like, Kemba, tough as nails. Fournier, tough as nails. RJ, tough as nails. Randle, again, maybe save it for next segment, but I really don't know what's going on with him right now. He was incredible in that first quarter, right? Could not have played any better. And then from that point on, just seemed, like, disinterested. And we've seen that again and again and again this year from him. I mean, in and out, right? Because sometimes he looks really, really good and really intense. And he's made some brilliant plays passing the basketball. The shooting seemed to have turned around the last two games. So I'm going to turn this into Rip Julius Randle, but I'm with you in that he is setting a tone that is not particularly good right now. And I think is having a bit of a carryover effect. But we'll continue that conversation next segment, because I want to tell everyone about one of our favorite sponsors, PrizePicks. PrizePicks has the best NBA DFS prop game on the market. Prize Picks offers more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator and offers all the superstar players as well as bench players only recording a handful of minutes each game. Prize Picks offers any prop you can think of, from yardage to touchdowns, even interceptions thrown. All of your users that deposit and use your promo code will receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Just be sure to use that promo code NBA. You pick 2 to 5 players and an over-under in their projections. You can win up to 10 times on any entry, and it's just you versus the projected numbers. Prize Picks allows mixed sport entries as well, so you can take the over on LeBron combined with the under on Mahomes in the same category. Use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. Prize Picks is safe and offers fast withdrawals. Don't hesitate. Check out prizepicks.com and use promo code NBA or go to your app store and download the app today. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. All right. With that, we are back on the Locked On Knicks podcast. Wanted to thank you all again for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today, and every day we're available on all platforms. And Alex, I'll throw it over to you because I can't get over how weird this season has been for Julius Randle, right? We've seen so many flashes of the guy that we knew last year that was a borderline MVP candidate at different points. And in some ways, he looks even better. And he's gotten to fully extend the range of his game, right? There's more stuff in the post. There's more passing from weird angles. It feels like he is in a situation to maximize all of his new abilities in a way that he simply couldn't last year. And yet, I don't know if it's an energy thing. I don't know if it's like a newfound personality thing. I don't know if it's just a small sample size, but all in all, it doesn't quite feel like he makes the same impact over the course of a game, even if there are more flashes.
Yeah, and I think it has to do purely with effort level. I mean, it's so obvious that he's not coming at the game with as much verve as he did previously, or at least not throughout the whole game. You know, we literally saw that in this game. Like, you score 18 points in the first quarter. I mean, there were times when he did that last year too. I think there was literally a game where he actually scored 18 points in the first quarter last year. And it was like, we all like lost our minds because it was like late in the season. It might've even been during the win streak. I mean, it was a crazy game. And you know, this should have been another game like that, where it's just the Julius show the whole time. And you know, if someone scores 18 points, that's Julius's caliber in the first quarter of a game, you would reasonably expect like, oh, he's about to go for like 38 right now or something. You know, you don't expect him to keep up that same pace and score 72 points or whatever, but you at least expect, you know, like 30 points, something like that, because he's shown that he can do that. And then he comes out of this game. I mean, if you looked at this as just an observer of the box score and hadn't actually watched the game, you might actually be like, oh, Julius had a pretty good game. Like, I wonder why they lost. Like 22 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. But like, the effort wasn't spread out across the whole game. It was concentrated on the first quarter and a half or so. Not even half of the next quarter. And that's the problem. You know, you can't be in a position where you're just going to try for as long as you think it is that you need to try to put the other team away and then just stop trying. Like last year's Knicks never did that. And that was part of why they were so good. And look, I'm saying all these things, the Knicks are 5-2. So obviously they're really good. And I think that I was on record before the season, you know, during our predictions podcast saying like, I think they could ascend as high as the 3 seed. I literally was on the last pod talking about like, you know, how high can this team go if they really figure this whole thing out? And, you know, that's still things that I'm thinking about, but so much of that is going to have to do with Randle and how he approaches the game, I don't want to play armchair sports psychologist. Like I just, you know, it's a fool's errand to do that. It's not fair to the players to try to like put yourself in their head or whatever if there's not something obviously there. But you know, like if it's a death in the family or something, obviously you know what's going on with the player. But with something like this, it's just like, I don't know what's going on in Julius's head, but whatever it is, he needs to find a way to find the same mentality that he had last year, because it seems like he has
a new baby. Maybe
what's that?
Didn't he just have a kid?
He did just have the baby. I mean,
he's not sleeping. I don't know. That's plausible.
I guess it is possible. I mean, if he's being very hands-on, I would think that he probably would have said, you know, to Kendra, his wife, and hopefully have like a, you know, hopefully the new contract extension paid for an au pair or something, you know, like a live-in nanny. But you know, if not, then yeah, I guess maybe he's staying up all hours of the night. But hopefully there was sort of a, an agreement in place with his wife of like, hey, I'm going to need to kind of, you know, I know we just had the baby, but I'm going to kind of need to be hands off with the whole staying up all night thing. But I don't know. Maybe that is it. Who am I to say? Maybe that is what it, I have a friend who just had a baby too, and he's certainly been having some weird nights at home. So I don't know. But whatever it is, I just, you know, I think that Julius just needs to like take a personal assessment. And like we've seen that he's good at doing that. You know, I don't think that he's above looking himself in the mirror and saying, okay, I need to do this, that, or the other better, because he literally did it last year and wrote that big piece in the Players Tribune where he was very forthcoming about, you know, he thought he was, you know, like too good his first year in New York, and, you know, was trying too hard to live up to the contract and this, that, and the other. And maybe that's something to do with it here too. You know, that there is kind of a parallel in that he just got an extension this summer, but hopefully he just kind of takes that look in the mirror sooner this season. It doesn't take a whole year, and he can be like, let's just go back to how I was last year, where I'm trying for all, the whole time. You know, like, regardless of how much help he has now, how much more help he still needs to be the engine for this team if they want to get anywhere. And, you know, I just think that that's going to require him working on his effort level and also working on his, I mean, I've talked about this already like three times this season, but working on his body language and the what he projects to his teammates on the court. Because as of right now, it's not getting the job done. And I think that's a large reason why the Knicks are blowing all these leads all the time and finding themselves in these, you know, late game situation. Not, again, not to say it's all Julius Randle, but as the leader of the team, he kind of takes the brunt of this, and he's certainly not leading by example at the moment at a lot of times in these games. So he's got to sort of get his stuff together as far as that's concerned, I think. But what's your read on the situation? I said I wasn't going to play armchair psychologist, and I like definitely like halfway played armchair psychologist. So
yeah, I think like it's a classic like sports radio trope. It's like, I'm not going to do this, but just this one time.
I'm
with you though. I think part of it, like just in a purely basketball sense, is he's still sort of calibrating like what is the balance between me taking over and me being a distributor. And last year it was a lot cleaner, right? Because he was the moon, the stars, the sun, the sky. He was everything for the Knicks. And that is more difficult, but it is less ambiguous, right? He had to make six or seven crazy mid-range fadeaways every game. He had to make a couple threes. He had to get all the way to the rim. He had to play kick-ass defense. This year, the Knicks can win without him doing those things. And he needs to find out, when am I supposed to and when am I not supposed to? And I thought in the first quarter, like, let's give him credit. He was incredible. I mean, 18 points, four threes, had a couple of really nice passes, setting up RJ for a three, setting up Fournier for a three. The one to RJ in particular was really nice. It was a righty pass. It was like kind of looping, no look. And it just felt like he was controlling and dictating every single aspect of this game, despite having OG Anunoby, who's one of the better defenders in the league for him. And then the Raptors sort of caught on. They started sending more doubles. It felt a little bit analogous to how the Hawks defended him last year. And Julius just sort of, he was kind of content to stay out of things. And when he did force the issue, it didn't turn out very well. And OG started doing a much better job on him. So I think for him, it's finding that balance at this point and knowing when to do what thing and just letting sort of the flow of the game dictate all that. And maybe we need to get into it more next segment, Alex, but I think you can't let the rest of the team off the hook, because I mean, who else really like stood out tonight in a meaningful way for the Knicks? Kemba Walker was good, but he blew a couple of layups. He's pretty efficient, but again, it wasn't like we still have yet to see. We've seen some good Kemba Walker games. We still have to see those monster Kemba Walker games. RJ Barrett, I should note, was a monster in this one. 27 points, 6 boards, 1 steal. So maybe we'll save that for the next segment and get into it. But outside of RJ, it was just not a whole lot of balance. But anyways, let's talk Shopify for a second. One of our newest sponsors on Locked On Knicks. Oh boy, I love that sound. Makes me smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. In case you didn't know, Shopify is a complete commerce platform that lets you start, grow, and manage a business. The subscription-based software allows you to set up an online store and sell their products. Shopify store owners can sell in physical locations using Shopify POS, our point-of-sale app, and accompanying hardware. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big businesses, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online, in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility, and Shopify helps you make your entrepreneurial dreams come true. I love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed down the street to around the globe. Shopify powers over 1.7 million businesses from first sale to full scale, reaching customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integration apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Pinterest. So go to shopify.com/lockedonmba, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/lockedonmba right now. shopify.com/lockedonmba.
And today's show is also brought to you by betonline.ag. We're back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today at betonline.ag and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, baseball's postseason, the NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, and we're back. And yeah, you know what, Gavin? I did, you ended the last segment on a good note because I wanted to talk about RJ, and it was so funny because when you were talking about him, now granted, it's going to sound weird to say this in a game that he had zero assists, but when you were talking about having to find that balance between scoring himself or creating for others, I think that that's something that RJ has really mastered over these last few games where, you know, in this game, again, you know, 27 points, 9-13 shooting, 5-8 from three, 4-6 from the free throw line. That's amazing. 6 rebounds, 1 steal, 0 assists in this one. So, you know, if you're just box score watching, you might be like, well, Julius clearly distributed better because Julius led the team in assists. But I don't think he did. I think that RJ did a better job and has been doing a better job of reading the room better, so to speak, and knowing when it's his time to shine, being as deferential as need be, particularly in the first halves when, you know, unfortunately, when things kind of switch to ice ball, that usually harms RJ the most. When the Knicks aren't moving the ball around, when RJ is not able to get open for those nice spot up threes, when he's not able to cut, when he's not getting the ball up top and having someone like Mitch set a screen for him to start freeing him up to go downhill towards the rim. You know, those are the times when RJ has most success, is when the Knicks are moving the ball more. But he's been a big part of keeping things moving when he does have the ball, I think. And he does a good job of knowing, okay, now's my time to shine, or now is the time for me to kick it out to somebody else after I've drawn the defense, or just kind of to get the action going and get other people involved. And I think he's been doing a really good job of that. It's probably the more underrated part of this little hot stretch he's going through, which hopefully isn't just a hot stretch, and hopefully he just starts scoring like 23, 24, 25 points per game now. That would be freaking amazing. I don't know how you feel about that. I think RJ struck a much better balance than Julius lately. And maybe Julius, for as much as I think he gave to RJ last year, as far as lessons, either spoken or unspoken, on how to play the game and you know, how to influence the game and all that stuff, I thought that RJ definitely took a lot off Julius last year. Maybe now's the time for Julius to kind of take something from RJ and try to just kind of get his head on straight again and get himself more, I don't know what the right word is. I have a word in my head, but I don't want to say it for Ghost of Knicks Past. But you know what? I'll say it anyway. Maybe RJ can help get Julius a little more zen and a little more at peace with what's going on the court and not feeling like he has to revert to like hero ball or whatever at any given time, and just kind of letting things come to him, because that's kind of been like the key to RJ's game lately to me, is just kind of letting the game come to him.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Like, he's not thinking out there. Julius is thinking about every single thing he's doing, or at least when he's not playing well, he is. And RJ is just sort of going, right? And we're starting to see, we were asking, what would the leap be this year for RJ? And it feels like less so like previous years where there were very specific skills that he added. And to some extent he has, like we mentioned that mid-range floater, but it feels like everything is just 10% better. Like he's that much quicker to the rim. He's that much stronger. He's that much better at finishing once he gets there. The shot just looks like the release looks quicker and smoother and snappier. And last year it felt like he shot 40% on a diet of really easy threes. Now he just looks like a typical high-level NBA 40% three-point shooter, right? Like it looks so smooth coming out of his hands. And I really think that Pelicans game had him playing with a lot of confidence, and maybe he just hadn't really gotten going yet this year. But I think in his mind, the last two games were who he was going to be this entire season. Obviously, you know, the competition in both of them, but there were some pretty good defenders, especially on the perimeter. And RJ was having his way with the vast majority of them. So I'm super excited about him going forward. Have the last two games, Alex, like influenced you? I don't want to say like talking about a ceiling sounds a little grandiose, but have they influenced your expectations for him this season after what was a semi-slow start?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I think we could probably place the realistic expectation somewhere in the middle, like not assuming that he's going to score 27 on 13 shots every night, but also not assuming that he's going to shoot like 2 of 10 or whatever he did in a few of those games and be less involved. It seems like they are slowly but surely sort of, I don't know if this is entirely accurate because of how the shot distribution works sometimes, but it seems like at least the last couple of games, they're making a concerted effort to make it clear that he's like option number two behind Julius Randle right now. And in some cases, you know, when he's really cooking, like I think in these last two games, honestly, he just kind of becomes option one, because if Julius isn't doing it down the stretch, then RJ's been doing it. And, you know, he was the hero against New Orleans with the, whatever it was, like 16 points in the last quarter or however many he scored. And then, you know, he was kind of the guy that they're going to late in this game too. And it was unfortunately just too little too late at that point. But yeah, I think if I was going to set a realistic expectation at this point, yeah, it's definitely gone up a little bit. Like I was kind of thinking, prior to these last two games and how they were treating RJ and his role and everything, I was kind of thinking like after the little bit of struggles at the beginning, I was kind of like, well, all right, maybe we're just looking for basically the same as what he put up last year. Maybe like, I don't know, he put up, I think 17.8 points per game or something like that last year. Maybe we're looking at like 18 or 19 points per game, not much of an uptick, but like better efficiency and just looking for little things like Breen said like a bunch of times, I think last game and this game, but mostly the last game, I think, where he was like, you know, RJ, even when he wasn't playing, like when his many shots weren't falling in the first few games, you could still tell that he got better, you know, even if the shots weren't falling. And I thought that it was just going to kind of be one of those years where with Kemba and Fournier ahead of him, you know, just kind of be like, well, RJ will have his moments, but by and large, you know, there's going to be a lot of nights where he's just going to score like 13. So he'll get kind of shoved to the side, thanks to the other three guys that he occupies the floor with. Plus, not even considering like the odd Mitchell Robinson 20-point game where he just catches like everything within a million feet of the rim and slams it home. But I think now it's starting to look like Tibbs and the Knicks and RJ himself and even the teammates are all kind of thinking like, no, it's RJ's time now. It's time for him to start busting out this like number three overall pick, top in his high school class for 10 years type stuff. And I think it's starting to work out. And, you know, I like what I'm seeing from him a lot. Again, if I wasn't effusive enough in my praise, but if I was going to like set an expectation for him, I don't think he's going to be doing what he's done these last two games for over the course of a whole season. But I now would not be surprised if he was like something like 22 points per game this year by the time all said and done, and maybe flirts with an all-star nod. If this is how they're featuring him versus how they feature Fournier and Kemba, then I could definitely see that happening. And combined with that defensive prowess, I mean, that would be like he'd be well on his way towards that like Jimmy Butler path that we've talked about for him a number of times. And that would be freaking amazing if he gets to that point in his third year. So yeah, that's probably about where I'm setting expectations now. Hopefully that's not too lofty and I don't look like a fool later on.
Yeah, I don't think he will. I've been someone who's questioned RJ a lot and just how good he could be throughout his career. He looks like the last two games we've never seen anything like this from him before. This is a whole nother level in terms of taking flashes we've seen in the past and putting them all together in a consistent way. I'm trying to think who else. Honestly, I mean, I know I'm inclined in his direction, and I'm always going to say he looked good. Even though Mitchell Robinson missed three different dunks in this one, I thought he was still a force. He only had 6 points because of those three missed dunks, though. He got two free throws for one of them, but also had 12 rebounds, three assists. Five of the rebounds were offensive. It felt like, I mean, obviously he wasn't going to start killing people in the post, but it felt like he could have even been more dominant given the size and athleticism advantage he had over the Raptors front court. You could just see the added weight on him in this one. He looked like Shaq going up against Todd McCullough or something. It was just a different kind of animal. And on top of that, he was pretty good passing the basketball. I noted those three assists, and it hasn't been anything super complicated with Mitch, but just little, he had a give and go with Evan Fournier that was pretty gorgeous, that got Fournier a wide open layup. He had another one to RJ that was really good. He had one to IQ, but then IQ got stripped. And I just like Mitch just using his size to pair over the deep, to stare over the defense and sort of just drop off his little micro dimes a la Nikola Jokic. None of the fancy stuff like Jokic, but just those basic reads were stuff that we really didn't see from him his first couple of years in the league. And I kind of like that as an added dimension to the Knicks offense.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, I thought that the same thing. Obviously, it's pretty easy to look like a big dude when you're facing Precious Achiuwa on the other side, or Kem Birch, who's, you know, a plenty talented center, but not the biggest guy in the world. But I thought that Mitch was really good too. You know, I tweeted this kind of late in the game. The Knicks sort of were looking like they were going to make the push for a minute there, but Taj Gibson unfortunately sprained his ankle in this game, and we don't know how long he's going to be out, but he only played 10 minutes. And Mitch though only played 28. I say only as if that's not a decent number of minutes, but his conditioning has seemed to be coming back lately, where, you know, he's been comfortably playing over 30 minutes. I think that Tibbs kind of squandered an opportunity to maybe give the Knicks a better shot to finalize a comeback. To be clear, an undeserved comeback, but a comeback nonetheless in this game by keeping Jericho Sims out there too long. He put him out there for, I could tell exactly how long, for a 5-minute stretch. And I just thought that was kind of what doomed the Knicks. That at that point, the three-pointers, for a moment there, stopped falling quite as much for the Raptors after they had been just destroying the Nets all day. And then they had Jericho Sims in there, and suddenly they didn't have to be afraid to go into the paint anymore. And they got a few pretty key buckets that way, including, I think it was the alley-oop to OG, I think, was when Sims was in, as well as a few other finishes on the inside that just were kind of demoralizing for the Knicks. And, you know, there was one possession even where Sims got himself so tangled up in the action that he literally just hit the deck in the middle of a play, because he whipped his head so hard practically that he made himself fall over trying to keep up with what was going on. He's just, I like the kid. I do think his physical gifts are crazy, but he needs a lot of seasoning still. And I wish it wasn't happening due to necessity in the middle of this Knicks. He was down in Westchester right now and able to play down there instead. Not that I think their season has even started yet, but you know, eventually I hope that he goes up to Westchester and spends a lot of time there, because he's just not ready for the NBA yet. So anyway, back to my initial point was, I think the Tibbs kind of missed an opportunity. I think that if he would have brought Mitch in about 3 minutes sooner, and you know, that would have required Mitch then playing the last seven and a half-ish minutes of the game, something like that, maybe even slightly longer, which is not super ideal. But also, I mean, he didn't seem to really be having to exert himself to be dominant. And to your point, he looked like Shaq out there compared to the guys that the Raptors were throwing at him. So I don't know. I felt like he didn't have to really get as, you know, tired out as he had to, say, against Vucevic or Embiid or any of the other
like giant monster centers that the Knicks have had to play this year so far. And I think that he could have gone out there and really influenced the game for the positive, taken away a few of those easy buckets that the Raptors got inside before then to close out the game. They got super hot from three again. You know, maybe you can kill their confidence a little bit that way by having Mitch out there as a deterrent. And then maybe you get to make a little better of a run. And if the Knicks got within 3 points or 5 points or something like that, then maybe the Raptors get uncomfortable, they buckle, and then the Knicks win. So I don't know. That was a kind of a missed opportunity by Tibbs. But I guess I'll make my final point before we get going. Like, Tibbs, I think you might have touched on this at the beginning of the show too, but like, Tibbs has been kind of an enigma lately. Like, I don't know how he's not more angry, like outwardly angry at how this team is playing. And maybe he's sort of trying to take an approach of, well, they have to learn from their mistakes and they have to, you know, they have to see a couple of these games early in the season that, you know, you're good, but you're not that good. And maybe this is his way of kind of making a point, but I just feel like he doesn't have nearly as quick of a trigger on the timeouts right now. He doesn't have nearly as quick of a trigger on getting guys out there that are clearly getting guys out of there, I should say, that are clearly not producing anything, which, you know, like Sims or something, like who I know was playing 5 minutes out of necessity, but probably could have safely played about 3 minutes or even less than that. And that could have made a huge difference. Or you could have just not played him at all and just played Julius and Obi for a little bit, which, you know, wild concept there, but you could have just done that for more than like the couple minutes that you tried that. But, you know, it's just, it's strange to me. I just don't, I mean, we talk about Julius being a little listless and stuff like that. And some of the guys on the team kind of seeming to be like resting on their laurels a little bit, but I almost get that same thing out of Tibbs, which is kind of weird to say. Like, he gets mad-ish. Like, you could see that he's upset with certain things, but it also almost seems like he's, I don't know if complacent's the right word, but like he's not feeling, maybe he's just trying to teach them a lesson about leading themselves or whatever on the court, but it seems like he's not taking as firm of a role of trying to like whip these guys in shape this year, so to speak. I don't know. Are you getting that impression too?
Yeah. I've definitely seen a bit of that. And I think the timeouts is the biggest point. Like, I keep almost expecting a camera to pan over Mike Breen to be like, Tom Thibodeau is not happy. He's going to take one here. And we keep not getting that. And I think the take is more so, at least on my end, that he just trusts them. Like, it's Kemba Walker, it's Evan Fournier. He's treating them as professionals, and maybe he's going to realize that approach isn't working right now. But I don't know. I don't feel like we need to overanalyze it this early in the year, but it's certainly something to watch. On that note, I think we can wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. We really appreciate all of you tuning in, as always, as the Knicks fall to the Toronto Raptors 113-104. If you haven't already, please subscribe on your platform of choice. And even if you're not currently on YouTube, go do it on YouTube. We really need it on YouTube. We start making some real money if we get up to 1,000. And I know you guys want us to be, well, not rich, but maybe lower middle class. So please go ahead and do just that. We really appreciate it. Until next time, peace out.